Welcome in for another classic Sunday afternoon solo edition of the Locked On Knicks podcast. I am your host, Gavin Shaw. We are talking through the Knicks' 102-94 loss to the Kings. We'll take you through the positives. They had a great start. We'll take you through the negatives. It was a pretty bad finish. Next on Locked On Knicks.
You are Locked On Knicks, your daily New York Knicks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Knox foul from behind, counting and one. As Fisdale pumps his fist.
What he does is contagious.
Robinson with a catch and slam. Across the lane to Trier. Trier drives down.
Becomes infectious.
You are Locked On Knicks, your daily New York Knicks podcast. I am your host, Gavin Shaw. After 4 years covering the Phoenix Suns while in college at Arizona State, I moved back to my native New York City, initially to work for the NFL and then to do some play-by-play broadcasting, but now to cover your New York Knicks. And that is my priority. It is my only priority. I literally care about nothing else. And that is why on about 2.5 hours of sleep, instead of doubling up and doing the Timberwolves pod and the Kings pod as one episode, Alex and I decided that I would grind this one out, and then he will give you guys a recap of the T-Wolves game tonight. So this is going to be a short episode because in just about an hour, thanks to Daylight Savings Time for really screwing this whole thing up, I'm heading out to Nassau Coliseum to broadcast the Class A and AA Long Island High School Championship games with Dave Resnick, who is the broadcaster for the Westchester Knicks. So it's a nice little coming together of my two worlds. So if you're into Long Island high school basketball, come over and say hi. Or if you're not, or if you're just kind of antisocial, or if you just hate me, that's cool. We can just be friends online, even if you hate me. I don't think that necessarily rules it out. All right. It was a 102-94 win for the Sacramento Kings over the New York Knicks, a game in which the Knicks had an early 27-12 lead, thanks in part to the spirited play of Dennis Smith Jr., who early in the game seemed to be of the mentality, I am going to take it to this upstart, De'Aaron Fox. And that did not last. Smith finished with 18 points, relatively inefficient, 7 of 19, while Fox dropped a cool 30-piece on him on two less shots, which is no bueno for our guy, Dennis Smith Jr. But you know what? Fox kind of does this to everyone. He sort of suns everyone in the same draft class as him. Like, I got a big kick in my last year of college when he would just toast Lonzo Ball, especially in that NCAA tournament game. It was really good. Like, one of them had all the hype. I mean, again, like, Lonzo, like, wasn't, not to get too sidetracked in what's going to be a short podcast, but Lonzo wasn't, like, doing this himself. It wasn't really his fault. It was sort of out of his control. One of these guys was so hyped. He's in every single episode of SportsCenter. He's on every minute of ESPN broadcast television. And Fox, as unheralded as you can be going to Kentucky, because Malik Monk was sort of the bigger name of the two, and he was the more explosive scorer. And Fox just absolutely ate his lunch in the biggest college game that those two will ever play in. So I love De'Aaron Fox. I thought it was kind of mean what he did to the Knicks in this game, but hey, you got to live with it. So the Knicks get out to this 27-12 lead. They're sort of giving the Kings a little bit of a taste of their own medicine, really sprinting at every opportunity. DeAndre Jordan is getting dunk after dunk after dunk, and then inevitably it sort of slowed down, despite the fact that Buddy Hield, the Kings' leading scorer, missed, I think, 10 of his first 11 shots. De'Aaron Fox sort of got them together. All of a sudden, Nemanja Bjelica is just tearing them apart. I think Clyde might have called him Bajelica or something, which I thought was just delightful. And yeah, the Kings sort of got back into it. Give the Knicks some credit. They made a little push in the third quarter. Emmanuel Mudiay, who was not very good down the stretch, had some nice moments, a shot making, hit a few really tough reverse layups, had a couple of nasty signature spin moves that were just great. So yeah, he had his flashes. Mitchell Robinson consistently good as always. Lance Thomas made a few threes. They found a way to put together a little bit of a run behind all these guys, but ultimately it was not quite enough, as I think this was a little bit of David Fizdale being committed to the tank. They had a long stretch where they had pretty much only bench guys in. It was a lineup of like Moutier, Jenkins. Dotson was out there too. Cornette. It was just all the backups at the same time. And then down the stretch, and I thought this was nuts. He pulled Trier, which was fine because this was and we're gonna get into it a little bit next segment. This was the first game that Trier didn't play particularly well in a long time. And I thought, okay, he's going to put Dotson in to run with DSJ to finish this up, and that's like a group that makes sense. Instead, he puts in Moutier, and all of a sudden, you don't really have the necessary balance of shooting and ball handling that the Knicks need to even have a chance at success. And Moutier misses a fadeaway, also has a turnover, and that just about does this one. Kings end the game on a 13-4 run, and that's how you get from 90-89. To 102-94. All right, with that, we will take our first break on Locked On Knicks. When we come back, we'll get into some player-specific stuff, and then we will finish up talking about James Dolan banning yet another fan. But hey, he's not salty. He'll tell you himself. That next on Locked On Knicks. Welcome back. Segment number two of your Sunday afternoon edition of Locked On Knicks. It is dreary outside, though the weather is turning around. I got to play pickup outside yesterday for the first time in like 3-4 months, and it wasn't that bad. This guy on the other team kept setting moving screens, and I don't know. I'd like an informal poll on this. What's the point where you can call out someone in pickup for moving screens? Because I would never ever do it. Like, you shuffle your feet a little bit, obviously, like that's absurd. You don't call that in pickup. But when a guy is literally on offense getting into a defensive slide and sliding over and like pushing you to stop you from coming out on one of his teammates, can you call that? I don't know. I got annoyed, and I did. And I'm not sure if that was the right decision or not. So maybe I'll start a poll on the Locked On Knicks Twitter. Anywho, player-specific stuff. This is a weird place to start because he was the Knicks' like sixth leading scorer. 2, 4, 6. He was the Knicks' eighth leading scorer in this game in what was a pretty balanced effort for the Knicks. They had 8 players with at least 7 points. Kevin Knox, but I thought this was actually pretty decent game from him, and I'm sure you guys saw the posting and toasting article by our friend of the pod, Drew Steele, basically making an analytics-driven case on why Kevin Knox is just having a historically bad rookie season in terms of his efficiency markers and really just about every metric you can imagine outside of points per game. And that's fair. And I would argue that a testament to that is I see that he was 3-for-12 for 7 points, and I'm marking that a good game. But I'll give you a couple of reasons why. I mean, first of all, comes out and hits a 3 right away, which is always a good sign. It turns out that was the only one of his 4 attempts on the day that went down. But I just liked how aggressive he was, especially in the early going, about getting to the rim, attacking the bucket, because that is, at least in my mind, the only way he's going to be worthy of the draft slot he was selected if he turns into a guy whose game is predicated on attacking the basket against smaller players and using his size to finish around the rim and being consistently aggressive and consistently getting to the foul line, which has obviously been a massive, massive issue. And it's probably indicative of the fact that aggressiveness was not consistent throughout the entirety of his 23 minutes because he did not take or make a single free throw in this one, but I still like the aggressiveness. And the thing is, when you drive and when you create confusion and you force help to come over, there are tertiary benefits to that help out your teammates. Particularly, I'm referencing there was one play where he drove and threw this nice little like hook pass over to DJ for a dunk. And those are the kind of plays that he can make with his length, where he has a guy that he didn't necessarily blow by, didn't get a whole lot of help, but he can see over his defender, and he has both the vantage point and the platform to be able to throw a pass like that, which is like over his head to like not a totally open DeAndre Jordan and hit him right under the rim for a dunk. He also threw a pass into the corner to Dennis Dotson on a fast break, which I know there was that play sort of circulating around where he was sprinting up the court and just sort of went in, and I can't remember if he just missed or committed an offensive foul, and Dotson sort of wide open in the corner, and you see the body language from Dotson just sort of says it all, like, come on, man, you never even looked over. And he did this time. So that's baby steps. Baby steps for Kevin Knox. As far as the other guys go, again, it was just an awesome start for Dennis Smith Jr., really being conscientious about attacking the basket. Had that 8-0 run. I think he had like 11 points in just like the first couple of minutes. And he's just playing with this verve in the early going that you wish you could see possession to possession, play to play. And it was something we talked about with Tom Piccolo. Like, all right, like he obviously like has this requisite athleticism, and it's comparable to guys like Derrick Rose and Russell Westbrook, but obviously he's not even in the same universe as a player as Derrick Rose and Russell Westbrook were in their respective primes. And why is that? And to me, at least, part of the answer there is that he doesn't always play with that verve, and it's a pleasant surprise when you do see it. It's not something that you necessarily expect. It's kind of a gift. And he had it early in this game, and like maybe it's like the little like rivalry with Fox and like wanting to show him up and wanting to prove he's the best point guard in the draft class. And DSJ, like, he was fiery the whole game. He committed like that sort of stupid technical where he elbowed B. Lietza at the end of the game that was sort of a death knell for the Knicks in this one, though they probably would have lost regardless. Either or, he went hard. He played great for one quarter, and then he just started settling for threes, and like he missed like three or four in a row. When like this is when like the Knicks were sort of falling out of the game in the middle, they got back into it. But if you play, I believe if he plays with that level of intensity offensively and defensively that he brought early in the game, and again, I give him a little bit of a pass, even though you know what, he ended up playing 32 minutes in this one, so I don't. I was gonna say I still think Moutier was in there too much, and I don't think he should ever have to play with Moutier, which I will stand by. But he did get plenty of time in this game to get into rhythm. And I just wish he was more aggressive. And I think with his athletic ability and just given how inefficient he is across the board in general, I just wish he shot more than three free throws in 32 minutes. That's a free throw every 10 minutes for a guy who gets to the rim about as easily as any point guard in the NBA. So I don't understand that. That'll forever frustrate me with him. And Dennis Smith Jr. sort of continues to be an enigma. And when you're an enigma, that kind of makes you movable in the NBA, and that's why you see guys like him getting traded every once in a while. All right, rapid fire. DeAndre Jordan, 26 minutes, 14 points, 15 rebounds. Again, it's not really all that mobile at this point, but I thought great game from him. Trier, first bad game in a while. Still got 8 free throws in 24 minutes, and you just compare and contrast that between him and DSJ. 8 free throws for Trier in 24 minutes, and then for DSJ, he shot 3 in 32. When DSJ, I mean, smaller, maybe less able to take contact, but far and away the better athlete. So I think that says something about both of those guys. And again, to me, that's sort of the ultimate confidence I have in Trier at this point, in that even though he had like an objectively like awful game and like the 4-for-8 from the free throw line is sort of inexcusable, like that kind of provides a baseline of competency when you know you can always get to the line. That's honestly, like, more than anything else, that's what makes James Harden a great player. Like, he can, every game, he's a guaranteed 10 points from the line. And that's a game changer. I didn't really think anyone else was that notable. Shout out to John Jenkins for coming in, stroking 3 triples to get them back into it. Again, Mitchell Robinson, there wasn't really like one play. Like, he had that really nice rebound and dunk. And okay, there was one thing that stood out to me. And I say this every time, but I will say it again. When he got Bogdanović on that 3-pointer, to me, like, and again, I think this is something that's always worth reemphasizing. It blows my mind. Guys try to shoot threes when he's within like a 10-foot vicinity of them, because you watch film if you're a guard and you know what's going to happen in those situations, but you see it time and time again. But what's the ultimate sort of compliment to Mitch's game is you get the sense that guys who try and shoot threes from him, it's because they've shot that shot against so many centers across the league, even the Goberts, even the Al Horford, like, even the Embiid, it's like all the best defensive bigs in the world, they get those threes off against those guys. So they see this rookie and they're like, if I do it against Rudy Gobert, why can't I do it against him? It's because Mitch is the best. He's already, in for my money, he's the best shot blocker in the NBA. And I think he's in his own tier in that category. All right, with that, we will wrap up this segment on Locked On Knicks. We will come back and give you 2-3 minutes on James Dolan. That next on Locked On Knicks. Welcome back. Third and final segment on this Sunday afternoon edition of the Locked On Knicks podcast. James Dolan, he did it again. He banned another fan. I think it is plausible the Knicks will have more fans banned over the last 5 years than games won. I do think that's in play, which is indicative of why fans might want James Dolan to sell the team. So this was sort of classic Dolan. He's walking out of the arena. Another not a brutal loss given the season and what we know and what the Knicks are trying to do, but a loss all the same for what right now is the worst team in the NBA. And a fan tells James Dolan to sell the team. And, you know, any normal human being would just sort of be like, all right, I'm a billionaire. And I get to own the Knicks. And I pay musicians to play music with me, and I call it a band. And I don't know. I kind of think that should be enough in life, and you should be able to have just the slightest bit of a thick skin, you know, like your players have had for years when your team's been struggling, and these guys have been booed relentlessly, probably heckled in person a million times, and they don't get to ban fans. But when a single fan tells James Dolan that he should sell the team, Dolan's response is that of a six-year-old and says, if you're mean to me, you can't play with my toys anymore. And says, you're not allowed to pay whatever exorbitant sum of money they charge for the type of seats that guy was in to watch this 15-53 team lose to the resurgent but still Sacramento Kings. And I don't know. I don't have any grand conclusions of this. I think anyone who is a Knicks fan, you already understand what kind of person Dolan is. But this, like, and you can literally see it in the expression on his face. It's just that of a petulant child. And I guess like you know, you want to be objective. You can say like, sure. Like in a perfect world, no one is mean to everyone. Everyone's nice. Everyone's encouraging. But I think when again you own this historic franchise and you've done nothing but incompetently manage them for 2+ decades and almost, I don't want to say single-handedly because there are all these other factors, but it all, I mean, the buck does stop with the owner to a degree. And again, it's been 20 years where the team with, I mean, you could certainly make a case that it's the Lakers now, but a team with one of the two greatest just inherent advantages based on who they are has been the worst team in basketball for that stretch. And that comes back to Dolan. And there have been a million examples. And there are other owners who aren't very good. Like I know like the T-Wolves owner isn't very good, but by all accounts, he's a great guy. Like it doesn't preclude you from being a good person. And I like to think that for me personally, and for most journalists, you can separate that and say, okay, this guy's not very good at his job, but he's a decent human being. And I don't think that necessarily applies to Dolan. All right, with that, we will wrap up this edition of Locked On Knicks, and we will most likely be back with you tomorrow morning if Alex decides to do a recap of that T-Wolves game, which is the plan as of now, and we'll get into some theme work next episode. My dog is coming up to me, so that means it is time to go. Talk to you next time on Locked On Knicks.